Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We have merged the streams here during election bye week, Steelers week, autumnal pumpkin pie, and the Taharka ice cream now with the cheesecake mixed together. It is fall here at the WNST Baltimore Positive and election week. And, you know, when I was a little boy, I campaigned against this guy, and then he became the election analyst. And we are so blessed to have him. And even though he has never invited me over for ramen to his place, they have him safely sequestered in the sky above
when
Baltimore.
When all this is over, when all this is
you can,
over,
Master. You can see him out your window, can't you?
Yeah,
you know, he can see the parks that he reigned over in East Baltimore and Patterson Park.
You're right.
Ted Matatoulis is back, and back from the beach, back in time for election season. And we had Nancy Pelosi on a couple of weeks ago, and I know you've been involved. This is one of the crazier weeks, and you're a little older than us, Ted. That I got a little butterfly, some really weird emotions this week in a way that I can't say I did with any of the Bushes or the Ronald Reagans.
Yeah, this is an unusual election. Nestor, we just have to come to grips with that. It's in many ways very mean. It's very divisive. And it's not, when I was in office, there was a lot of, we campaigned hard, but there was a lot of civility. We never attached names, attacked people personally. We looked at their programs and their what they were doing, and we revved it up. But this is really very unusual. But we'll get over it. I mean, it'll get done, and we'll get over it with.
Well, I thought that I saw David Plouffe last night, of course, Obama's campaign manager, now a consultant to MSNBC and, you know, all around the country. And they said, well, what do you advise people? Nestor, they were talking about people all over the country having your malaise right now with these butterflies and so nervous. And he said, first of all, don't look at the polls. Don't go to Real Clear Politics average. Don't go to 538. Just work as hard as you can.
That's exactly
the final
right.
Week. Make as many calls. Get as many people to the polls. So
there and hustle and work. And both parties should do that. But of course, I want the Biden folks to do it. And they are, by the way.
They're working.
My family's calling into Pennsylvania.
Yep. Yeah, no, my daughter makes calls several times a week. Everyone's engaged. I got friends writing postcards. So the ground game has been impressive. One of the reasons we wanted to have you back, Ted, and we'll have you back post-election to try to sort everything out. But as you always do somehow, Ted Venatoulis is always years ahead of the curve. And in 1968, if I read it correctly,
that's
is that
correct.
Right?
Yes.
1968. Ted Venatoulis wrote a book called The House Shall Choose. It is still available at bookstores and on Amazon, at the big boy shops, as well as the little shops that we try to support in the neighborhoods. The House Shall Choose. First of all, Ted, tell our listeners what in the heck the book was about. I think they're going to be shocked. And why in the hell you wrote the book?
Well, I was working on the Hill at the time. It was 1968. And as you may recall, George Wallace entered that race. And he was really had a hell of a shot. Very, very popular in the South and popular in Maryland. And it occurred to me, many people were starting to discuss the idea that if there are three candidates, Constitution says if none of the candidates, it's a majority of the electors. 270, I think it was 270 at the time, the election falls to the House of Representatives. And the House of Representatives chooses the president. The House shall choose. It's only happened twice in our history. And they were fascinating times, particularly the first time was in 1800, actually 1801, when Thomas Jefferson and Aaron Burr were tied. And it took Jefferson 35 ballots to beat Burr. And he beat him because Alexander Hamilton switched a Federalist vote from Burr to Jefferson. And that's what prompted the duel, by the way, between Jefferson and Burr that was so vividly described in the play Hamilton. It was that particular incident. So in that incident, 35 ballots, the House had to keep balloting and balloting. And it was rough. I mean, names were flying and all that business. The second time wasn't as poignant. It was 1824 when John Adams made a deal with Henry Clay. There were five candidates. Adams made a deal with Clay. Clay became Secretary of State. Adams became president and led to Andrew Jackson's election the next time because Jackson called it a corrupt bargain and campaigned on that and became the president in 1828. So the issue is whether that deadline or stalemate occurs this time. So let's talk about that for a moment. Could it? In first, the electors meet, we vote on November the 3rd. The elector, we also vote for electors, as everybody knows. On December the 14th, the electors meet in their individual capitals to cast their votes for the president. The president has to get 270. But first of all, those electors have to be certified by the states. Each state certifies its electors. Normally, there's not a problem they get certified. These electors do not have to vote for the person who carries their state. There's nothing. Some states insist on that, but very few. And most of the time they do. There are some what we call faithless electors, where they go off on their own, and there have been a, but they don't have not influenced an election. Once that happens, let's say there's no battle on a certification, although there is some Republican effort to make some noise on those on the certification and try not to certify them to delay or go to court or something. But let's assume they are certified. They send those certified electors to the Congress. On January 3rd, the new Congress is elected.
Ted, I want to stop you just for a second. Sure. Because I think our listeners now are really focusing in on this and they're trying to follow it. Let's take that first point you just made, because my wife will ask me and she'll go, it makes no sense. Are you sure it's right? And it's this point about faithless electors. So before you jump to January 3rd,
okay.
On December the 14th, we know that Maryland is going to vote overwhelmingly for Joe Biden. Are you suggesting that on that's on November the 3rd, on December the 14th, hypothetically, Maryland's 10 electoral college votes could say, nah, we're not doing that. We're going to vote for Donald Trump. Under the Constitution, you're saying they may do that?
Yes, they could do that. They could do that.
See, I don't think people know that, Ted.
That's never happened.
Did you know that, Nestor?
Elector, or if one of those Maryland delegates said, I don't like Joe Biden, I'm going to write in Hillary Clinton or something like that. That's what has happened with the faithless electors. But so no group has. But in some of the states where it's close, if it's a Republican, let's say it's a Republican legislature and a Republican governor, they could play games with the electors. Let's say the Democrats won the popular vote. The General Assembly and the governor control the certification of those electors, and they could throw them out and say, look, there was fraud. We're throwing those electors out. We're certifying this batch of electors. And they send those to Washington. And then they vote. Now, there'll probably be lawsuits and everything. And because Republicans have been drumming this up, I have to say that Nancy and the Democrats are prepared for that. In case anything like that happens, quite frankly, there's some things that they can do. But let's get it to January the 3rd. So that, I hope, explains the faithless elector.
Just problem. Real quick before you do that, Nestor, were you aware that electors did not have to cast their vote?
I have read and seen those. Yes. I mean, I follow the media and Twitter and more modern things. Yes. And I would wonder how that would go over in said state.
Some states, by the way, Nestor, some states do have legislate that those electors have to support the winner of the election. A couple states have proportionate breakdown. If you win, you don't get all of the votes. You get that congressional district or something like that. But when you do that, you lose your power. The power in the states is to deliver their entire delegation to a single person.
Well, then you literally become a rogue state, right? Literally.
You can be a rogue state. We call them a faithless elect, but it's a rogue state. You could, but it hasn't happened.
And so now we're on January 3rd, Ted. So now we're on January 3rd.
The new Congress is sworn in, and that's important. Because on January the 6th, the Congress meets to ratify the electors, okay? Because the Congress now has to ratify these guys. And now if both the Senate and the House do not ratify, let's say they don't ratify Maryland's electors, if let's say the House doesn't ratify it, but the Senate does, well, then there's a battle over that. There can be a fight. Now there has not been. Normally they make their deals, they ratify the electors, and then where the fun begins. If nobody gets 270 electors, a majority of the electors, then it falls to the House of Representatives to choose a president. And that's where the House shall choose. Now, the House picks the president, the Senate in the meantime picks the vice president. The Senate votes individually, you need 51 votes. The House, however, votes by states. Every state has one vote. California, with 53 members of the House delegation, cast one vote. Wyoming, with one member of their delegation, cast one vote.
Now, Fred, Ted, I love the founding fathers. I love Hamilton and Madison.
This isn't and working
Jefferson.
Anymore.
What well, in the world were they thinking?
No, they had a reason for it. They did not want the mob to pick a demagogue. Does that sound familiar? And they had a cooling process. People would vote for, by the way, at that time, legislature. The legislature would pick the electors. The electors would then pick the president. Each step of the way gave everybody a chance to see if they did the right thing.
Checks and balances, is that the word for it?
It's part of the balance. Sure. Our balance is between the three branches, but this is a cooling process during an election. So the electors were supposed to be, by the way, very independent. They were supposed to be the wisest people in our country, and they were supposed ultimately to pass on what the public did. Okay, so now, and by the way, they thought that the House, which is the people's body, should make that choice when it stalemated. That's why they picked the House. They also did it one vote at a time because they had to compromise with the Senate, with the Southern states and the New England states, and they had to make a compromise. So it wasn't something they did just, okay, let's do it this way. They thought it through. They had a lot of battles and debate over it.
Let's reset. Uncle Ted's here. Ted Venatoulis joining us from my neighborhood without ramen, but at some point sushi's going to be involved. I learned how to eat with chopsticks. Don Moeller's here, former Baltimore County executive. All of it brought to you by our friends at the State Fair and El Guapo and Fadley's and Moeller and Gary and Taharka and all of these wonderful Baltimore things. Ted, I want to ask you as the senior guy here, and where we are with states and federal, you know, anytime we talk about how we're going to get anything back in this country on the backside of the masks and COVID, it's going to be federal help and where we are. And, you know, my dad always talked about the New Deal and FDR. We hear about AOC and wherever all of this is going to go. But from the states and the federal, the friction, what we see happen with Gretchen Whitmer, In Michigan, where, I mean, at one point you ran for the governor of our state. Can you imagine the president of the United States not backing a governor after an attempted kidnapping and coup? I mean, we're in a different place here with this guy as far as how the states view themselves and how they've been viewed with simple help during a plague as to whether they shine the shoes of the president.
We've never seen this, and I think part of it is because the president never had any experience in politics, never ran for office before this, never had to deal with general assemblies or governors, did not understand the way the Constitution was set up and the balance between the states and the federal government and the requirement of the federal government to intrude itself on the national issues. When there's a hurricane, we send federal help. If there's any kind of catastrophe, a flood of that nature, the fires in the West Coast, we send federal help. And that's part of the system. We don't send troops. That's a different thing. The Constitution, the framers did not want the national government to have the power to intrude on the states because they wanted to protect itself from military engagement. They do if a governor calls for it or if there's some kind of a real reason for that happening. But in any event, let's take it, that's That's not right what's going on today. It'll be squared out because the country has a lot of resilience, and we'll get back to that reasonable relationship. In the meantime, we get to the House of Representatives, okay? No one has 270. The House meets and it starts to vote. And the winner has to get 26 states. They have to give a majority of the states. Today it's 26. If this current House of Representatives voted, the Republicans, even though they don't have a majority of the House, do have 26 states. So the Republicans could pick the president if the election took place today with this House. For the Democrats, fortunately, it'll be the next House of Representatives, the one that gets sworn in on January the 3rd, that will pick the president. And that breakdown may be different. Let's say Biden wins. The Democrats control the House, they'll probably designate Biden. And the Senate, with 51 votes, if they wanted to, they could, if they don't, the Democrats don't get a majority there, they could pick Pence if they wanted to. You know, that has not happened because this hasn't happened that often, but they don't have to pick the Democrat. That's one reason why the Democrats are fighting so hard to win the Senate as well as the House, in case it does go to the House of Representatives. But let me also say this. If there's any skullduggery that will go on in the House of Representatives when they vote, Nancy is ready for that as well. So she's just, if Biden wins the election and it's stalemated, there's going to be a hell of a battle in the House of Representatives, depending on that makeup. Now, let me take it one step, because you guys will like this. If the House can't come to grips with somebody, if they can't get 26 votes, as happened with Jefferson and Burr, where it went 35 ballots, the House has to keep voting. If no one gets 26 votes, and let's say the Senate is stalemated and they can't pick somebody, they need a quorum and all that business on the Senate, the acting president becomes Nancy Pelosi. The Senate hasn't picked a vice president. If the Senate does pick a vice president, that person becomes acting president until the House settles on the president. If the House doesn't settle and the Senate doesn't settle, the third in line or the second in line, Nancy, becomes acting president. It's a crazy system, but we could get our own local gal president of the United States if it gets double stalemated or double deadlocked.
How does the Venetoulis book in 1968, well, The House Shall Choose, how does it end? Give us the spoiler. This is a spoiler alert. How does it end?
Well, I have an epilogue to the book, and the epilogue is the battle between Wallace, Humphrey, and who was the opponent to Humphrey? Was it Nixon? Who was the Republican opponent that year?
It was Nixon.
Yeah.
Richard
Humphrey,
Nixon.
George
Wallace won 13 states.
George Wallace won 13 states, Ted. What?
George Wallace won 13 states.
He did. He won 13. Oh, no. He had a shot. Oh, this was not something ephemeral. He had a shot. And so the epilogue takes it through. And then we have, you know, Humphrey winning the election or whatever. But anyhow, so that's the major stalemate that could happen. There are other stalemates. The president dies. Let's say before the votes are counted, one of the candidates passes away, dies. It's a great book by Jeff Greenfeld called The People's Choice, where a president of one of the parties, the schedulers insisted he go to some state and ride a horse because they had to cancel it during the campaign, and they promised the cowboys out there, Wyoming or Montana, that they would send him out to a rodeo. Well, the guy's never ridden a horse, but he has to go on the horse because that was the whole deal. And the veterinarian injects the horse mistakenly with some high power thing. The horse jumps up, president-elect falls over, goes over, and he's dead. He's gone. And now, who is the president? The electors haven't voted yet. The election's over. This guy has won, but the electors haven't voted. Who do they vote for? You can't put somebody on the ballot. It's too late. So In this instance, the question is complicated, but it's an interesting book, and it tells you a lot about
that. We don't know
how to handle that, by the way. There is a system. The party recommends somebody. Republican Party would recommend somebody for Trump. The electors would have the choice of picking him or elevating their vice president if they chose. Now, suppose the president dies, I don't know, after the Congress meets. We're not sure of, well, if that takes place, then the acting president will become president. So that's reasonably taken care of. But it's very tricky when you have these kind of lapses or episodes that occur in our system.
There will be many folks opining about this on the evening of November 3rd. We have scooped them all, and we've beaten them to the punch, as we do here on Baltimore.
You know, all of this made me wonder, as I'm sitting here with two former Baltimore County executives, that when Kevin Kamenetz passed, you bring, I still don't really know how Mueller became county executive. I don't really know,
Council picks the president.
Absolutely.
And they picked the best man. They picked Don.
Well, thank you for that. But I can remember Nestor at 6 a.m. on that awful morning, the morning after all the press was there, and that was their first question. And again, the
first question is, who's running the county? Is that literally?
Well, yes. What happens now? And the county charter was crystal clear that in the interim, the county administrative officer, who at that time was a gentleman named Fred Homan, runs the county until the county council decides who they want to complete the term.
Does every county and municipality, they have to have something?
I think most of them
literally.
Do. Yeah. I think most of them do have the council. Don't you, Don?
I do.
Executive. Yeah, I think most of them. And the administrative officer serves in the interim until they meet and do that. It's a good system.
But your question is a good one, Nestor. People wanted to know, you know, is there snow going to continue to be cleared? Is there trash going to be picked up? Are we going to continue to meet payroll? And the answer was, all of that will happen. The administrative officer is in charge until the council decides who they would like to complete, in this case, in this tragic case, the final seven months.
We have a simple continuity system. I think it works.
Yeah. And it worked quite well.
And it's going to be put to the test here, right? I mean, I think that's the reason we're even talking about any of this, is that we feel like with this guy, with the ethics of this guy, with the words that have been spoken, that things are in the balance here that have never been questioned before as to what happens next week at 11 o'clock on Tuesday.
Nestor, you're exactly. This is the first time we have had a president or a candidate who attacks the voting system, calls it fraudulent. We've never had a president do that because we really have very, very little fraud that has taken place. But that's the first time. It's the first time that we have had a candidate say they may not follow the normal transition when they lose. Even Al Gore, who had real reason to hang in and not accept the Supreme Court's decision, because it really was a rocky decision, said right off the bat he will follow, he will help the new president-elect get oriented. Donald Trump hasn't said that.
Ted, one
of the things that offends me about many members of the Republican Party, which I think has been a great party, that they don't catch him on that and say, wait a minute. Continuity has been the essence of our democracy. We go from one president to another without machine guns in the marketplace.
But he is a human being that has demanded fealty at every level, and that's what we're seeing 44 months into this, right?
Well, and to be fair, Ted uses the Gore example. To be fair to our friends on the Republican side of the aisle, you can go back to 1960 when, you know, there were multiple reports that perhaps Mayor Daley in Cook County in Illinois held the votes till he figured out exactly how many Jack Kennedy needed to win that state. And there were numerous Nixon advisors who encouraged him to challenge the vote in Cook County to drag it out. And Nixon famously said, I'm not going to put the country through that. We are we pride ourselves on a peaceful transition of power. So, Ted, before we let you,
and I'm glad you raised that, Don, then come back, because it does show that candidates of both parties have honored the continuity system. Go ahead.
Without a doubt. Ted, before we let you run, and as I said, we really do look forward to you coming back on post-election.
Well, I'll give you my prediction before it's over.
Yeah, well, I want that. I'm going to get that at the end. Before we ask you for your prediction, what you're a writer, I always say. You're really an outstanding writer. You're a county executive, elected official, and a publisher, but I think in your heart, like Nestor, you have a writer's heart.
I think you're right about that.
No, you guys have
writer's
hearts.
I've accepted it at 52. Yeah.
When you sit down post-election, and I hope you will write extensively about this, without rancor, without anger, remove Trump from the picture for a minute and try to analyze Trumpism. Okay. What is it? Forget Donald Trump, the reality star. But what is it? We talked with Josh Kurtz a little while ago. What is it that allows millions of people to watch an incredibly polite and courteous Leslie Stahl? And because the president tells them she was a bitch, quote unquote, and awful and nasty and mean, they say, my God, she was mean and nasty. And you watch it, and she was like your first grade teacher, right? I mean, she or your Sunday school teacher. She couldn't have been more polite.
What? Can you imagine him in a negotiation with Putin or something? If he thought amazing. She was rough.
What are your initial thoughts, Ted, analyzing what happened to allow Trumpism, not Trump, Trumpism?
Well, it's always pained me, and I often sit down and think, well, am I wrong? Because there's apparently 35% of the public that has a certain adoration for this fellow. It's a cult. It isn't a base. It's a cult. They condone him on Fifth Avenue shooting someone. I mean, I believe that. He is, you know, think of it. He's called John McCain a coward. He's called men up our forces, military, losers, suckers. He's a demeaned woman. I mean, I don't get it.
He's diminished a plague in the middle of a plague.
That's my challenge, Nestor. Ted, we're not going to pin you down today. Okay. My challenge to you over the next few weeks is to try to put pen and paper and to make some sense out of it. Because we're going to have to go forward either way.
Yeah.
We're
yeah.
going to have to go forward if he wins. We're going to have to go forward if he loses. And we have to figure out what it is. As you said, I'm in exactly the same place you are. I want to be able to have a better discussion with my friends and relatives.
Right, going forward.
I mean, I'm in close relatives.
Because there's no discussion now. It's still heated.
I don't know how to have it. Because we don't see things the same way. Yeah. All right, we're getting ready to wrap it up, okay. Ted. Here we go. November 3rd, days away. Ladies and gentlemen, you're hearing it right from the horse's mouth. As Nestor calls him, Uncle Ted is going to tell us where this election is coming out.
All right. I hate to say this because it makes me nervous, and I don't, it's too optimistic. Anyhow, I think Biden's going to win in a landslide. I think he's going to get over 300 electors. And I think he's going to get 57% of the vote. Now, I hope my optimism doesn't jinx it, but I really sense that the country is fed up with what we have seen over the last 4 years. And when you look at all the Republicans who have been flailing away, the Lincoln Brigade, the anti-Trump Brigade, all the members of the administration who are jumping off the ship. And unfortunately, they deserve it because of the Republican Senate. If they would have stood up and talked to him and said, look, some of this stuff, you just can't do it. Cut it out. If they'd have cautioned him, if they'd have talked to him, we wouldn't be in this mess, I don't think. And they would have a shot at reelecting him. But they didn't do that.
Nestor, you've heard it. You've heard it. It's a blue wave, according to Ted Venatoris. Mark that on your calendar. We're going to come back and see if he was correct.
Ted, I don't know if it's going to be ramen or meatballs or, you know, I don't know, some eggs and bacon, something. But you and I are going to get together at some point.
We will.
neighbors. Okay, all right.
Right after this is all over, when my gang lets me out.
Yeah, you know, I mean, but we'll get the key for you. Ted Venatoulis, former Baltimore County executive, Towson Times publisher, and, of course, man around our town of Baltimore, as well as former Baltimore County executive Don Moeller, my high school guidance counselor, getting wisdom and getting civics courses here. We are WNST.net, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore.
Keep it up, guys. You're doing a great job. Keep it up.
And we never stop talking Baltimore positive.